Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It was 12th of April, 1204. And the unthinkable, the unimaginable, happened. The new Rome has fallen to the barbarians from the west. The capital of the Eastern Roman Empire, or as we know it now, the Byzantine Empire, was sacked by the Western Crusaders, Christians from Venice, France, and other European kingdoms. The Crusaders went into the city and carnage followed. Citizens were raped and massacred, buildings were torched and churches desecrated. Alexius, the emperor, fled to Thrace, and 3 days of looting followed. The most splendid, biggest, most important city in Christendom had fallen to the hands of other Christians. At that point, the Byzantine Empire was no more. The lands of Constantinople and Greece were divided between different kings, Franks, Venetians, and so on. But has the Byzantine Empire gone for good? From 1204 to 1461, there was a city that was at the heart of an empire that proudly proclaimed its inheritance of Byzantine power and simultaneously stood apart from it. A Greek emirate surrounded by Turkish and Caucasian states. This was the Empire of Trebizond, centered around the modern day of Trabzon in Turkey, at the coast of Black Sea, an area of strategic importance and commerce with huge mountains and lush forests as well. There, the Hellenic heart beat for more than 2 millennia, from about 700 BCE. And there was the area that Xenophon wrote on his book, The Legendary Anabasis, or The March of the 10,000, the story of the Greek army's retreat from Mesopotamia and Asia Minor back to Greece through hostile territory and unknown topography, when they finally escaped from all the eastern hordes and barbarians, and they saw the sea, and they proclaimed, the sea, and they heard people speaking Greek when they finally thought they were saved. Trabzon, Samson, Kerasun, and the surrounding area, it was the Pontic Greek heartlands. These areas, alongside with the opposite coast of the Black Sea, in modern-day Crimea and Azov Sea, it was the Greek kingdom of Pontus. Hello, my name is Thomas Dinas, and this is the Delicious Legacy Podcast. Welcome back to another archaeogastronomical adventure. I grew up in Veria, in northern Greece, in Macedonia, and there was a place called Panagia Soumela, a church and monastery, isolated up in the mountains, about 40 minutes drive from my town, in a lush and gorgeous forested area in the mountain Vermion, near the village of Castagna. This church monastery was around 1,300 meters above sea level, on a mountain slope. Now, as a kid, I knew that this place was special for my fellow Verians. But growing up and becoming more like a teenager, I learned and heard more about the original Panagia Soumela, a monastery in Pontus, that's the original one, near Trabzon city in modern Turkey. Roughly 1,800 kilometers away from my hometown. This place is reminiscent of Minas Tirith in Tolkien's seven-walled fortress city built on the spur of a mountain, and is nestled in a steep cliff at an altitude of about 1,200 meters or 3,900 feet above sea level, on a very mountainous slope facing a beautiful, lush and forested valley. This monastery is dedicated to Virgin Mary, and it was built around 386 AD, during the reign of Emperor Theodosius I, and it was built, apparently, from two Athenian monks named Barnabas and Sophronius, which they founded the monastery. It became famous for an icon of Panagia, of Virgin Mary, and this icon known as Panagia Gorgoipikos, which said to have been painted by Apostle Luke himself. During its long history, the monastery fell into ruin several times, and it was restored by various emperors and enlarged by the Byzantine general Belisarius at the behest of Emperor Justinian, perhaps the most famous and one of the greatest emperors of the Eastern Roman Empire. And so the food that I want to talk about on this episode is from the Greeks of this area. Little is known of them outside Greece, of course, and the painful memories that many of the Greeks have about this area, it makes it even harder to talk about the great and the positive things that this culture has. Now, the spur for this episode came because there was an article on a newspaper, The Guardian, recently from a researcher about an endangered Greek dialect, which is apparently the living bridge between the ancient world and today. And that's the language of Romaica, which is spoken in this area of modern-day Turkey, in the isolated mountainous valleys of Pontic Trabzon. So, growing up in Greece, knowing about the area, knowing about the Greeks there, and knowing about the painful memories of the 20th century, the genocides of Armenian and Pontic Greek, and their expulsion from their ancestral homes, I knew they had different food, and I was always a little bit curious of that. What was their food like? What were the influences? And I was hearing all these different words and recipes and dishes, and it was so much alien to me growing up. So yeah, I want to try and tentatively make an introduction to the cuisine of the Pontic Greeks, and their foods and the dishes and their culture. And I think this episode is just that, basically, like a little taster of this rich and ancient culture, which, of course, has elements from ancient Greece, and, of course, being where they are, there are many, many similarities with the cuisines of the cultures around the Black Sea and the Caucasus Mountains. So there are influences from Georgia with a rich cheese culture, and Ukraine, and Armenians, and of course the Tatars and the steppe people who populated the northern shores of the Black Sea for millennia. By the way, that scenery on of the monastery, it's amazing. It's an amazing place, so beautiful and lush, and such a wild and isolated mountain. And I will post on the episode notes YouTube videos with drone footage of these areas. They're just incredible. It's another world, really another world. It doesn't feel like it's occupied by Greeks. But in any case, this is very interesting. This part of the story as well. So the basis of the Pontic cuisine is cereal, pasta, and sour milk-based produce, including cheese. And the most common dishes are soups, including tannomenon sorva, which is a soup with coarse grains, salty strained yogurt and mint. Another, among other dishes, siron, a pre-baked phyllo-based pastry dish. Tzavitch, a thick corn dish resembling a porridge. And fustoron, an omelette with fresh cow butter. And other common staples include anchovies from the Black Sea, the plentiful anchovies of the Black Sea, and greens, a lot of wild and forage greens. And by the way, the pronunciation of these recipes and dishes, it's quite difficult and a challenge. So I hope I kind of have a little bit of the correct pronunciation for these foods. As I said, this is an introductory episode. Really, I know almost nothing about this cuisine, even though there were many, many Pontian Greeks in Greece where I was growing up, especially North Greece and Macedonia and Kilkis and Thessaloniki. And they have a lot of dishes and influences and a lot of things cooked by friends, mums and grandmothers of friends and so on. And the point is that I'm going to try and find some experts to talk about this subject. I'll try and get some Pontiac Greeks to tell me about their cuisine and about history and culture. And that's some ongoing research happening at the moment. As you can imagine, with the expulsion of the Greeks from the Black Sea and their coming in mainland Greece, in mainland modern Greece, so suddenly a lot of their customs and a lot of their language was lost. And of course, there's a painful memory of the lost homelands. And that happened like 100 years ago. And a lot of the original grandmothers and people who knew the recipes spoke the language, and they kept the culture for a few decades. Obviously, now they are dead. So it's a little bit more difficult for me to find a lot more than that I'm going to tell you on this episode. But I hope really soon, in the near future, I will have another episode about the subject. And so, the Pontic Greeks' homeland was approximate to the Black Sea region of Turkey today. And it's one of the most fascinating and, I would say, non-Mediterranean Greek regional cuisines. The Pontic Greek traditional cuisine is diverse and incorporates traditions from all these regions, as I said, the mountainous wild regions of the Pontic Atlas Mountains, and the coastal regions, of course, which are maritime trading places. And on top of that, you have ancient Greece, you have the nomadic regions from the north of the Black Sea, you have influences from Russian, Turkish, Laz, Hemshin, and Armenian cuisines and cultures. The Greek Pontic cuisine consists primarily of grains and dairy products, and its foundation is formed by these fermented milk products and a plethora of grilled dough dishes. Yes, grilled dough dishes. So the egg dish fusturon that I mentioned, it was a nice breakfast meal for the Pontic Greeks. Depending on the region of the Pontians, the fusturon would be prepared with different ingredients. For example, in the coastal areas of Sirmenon, they ate tzapso fustoron, an omelette with anchovies. In the region around Ordu, they ate melofustoron, a honey omelette, and around Argyropolis, they ate pumpkin omelettes. Up in the mountains and in the plains and the highlands, omelettes with potatoes were made around the Sanda area. And finally, there was a legume omelette called fasulotiganon, which was also very popular in certain mountainous regions. They also made felia, a Pontian-type style French toast. The finished felia was sprinkled with honey or sugar. Pontians also made lalangia, a type of fried dough similar to pancakes. They were made with yeast, flour, melted butter, lemon zest, milk, and sometimes raisins. One dish called Kinderta is a type of nettle soup, and it has similar roots, and it's served with the Iranian cuisine. This soup, prepared with stinging nettles, might also have other vegetables and grains, and it was typically flavored with garlic and hot peppers. Another soup popular in winter was mavra lahana, which was made with cabbage, beans, and sometimes spicy peppers as well. Mapo surv was the name of a soup made with white parts of cabbage. Bean soups were referred to by the catch-all name fasulo sirv. Males was a sort of a grain soup made with flour. Pontians also, as I said, they had their own variety of borscht, which they called porridge. Rice was also popular, and there was a rice with mussels called midopilafon, and it was like a pilaf type of rice with mussels and fresh herbs like such as dill were cooked into the pilaf to give it its flavor. And that was a recipe more popular by the Black Sea coast, like in Trabzon, where people could fish, as opposed to further inland up in the mountains. Another coastal variety was hapsipilavon, which was an anchovy pilaf, and this was made in the winter and spring when the fresh anchovies were abundant. Of course, as I said earlier, Pontians ate salted anchovies all year round, and typical seasonings on this anchovy pilaf dish were parsley, chopped pine nuts, and raisins. And this is a dish that is also served with the Laz people, which is a group of Kartvelian ethnic group from the South Caucasus and mainly living around the Black Sea coastal regions of Turkey and Georgia. Another ancient ethnic group that has been mentioned by classical writers as well. I'll be back after this short break.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Taking a step back, the Greek name for the Black Sea is Efxinos Pontos, which means hospitable sea. And it's from the ancient Greek communities that lived in the northern Turkey for centuries. So basically, before they made their colonies and cities there, it was the inhospitable sea. The Ottomans referred to them as Rum, a religious community and as an ethnic group distinct from the other tribes and nations of Anatolia. And in a sense, the Pontus region can be seen as a modern analog of today's, as I said, today's Black Sea Turkey. On the south, as I said, from the region, this is fringed by the Pontic Alps, which is a large mountainous range, which stretches from east to west along the southern coastline of the Black Sea. The coastline is fringed by rainforests that turn into large pastures in the summer. And you see now where the Pontic food comes from and their cuisine. For the Pontic Greeks, the topography had a great impact on their history as it protected them from foreign invaders. And for this reason, they developed their unique and distinct economies and cultures in this area. Some of the dishes and food types that they found with other various cohabiting ethnicities around the area, around the Black Sea is Τζιριχτά, which is a type of donut, μάλες, which is flour porridge, σίρον, as I said, a pre-baked phyllo pastry dish, and broth, which is a hearty broth with meat and various vegetables. And you'll find this from different cultures like Armenians or Turks or Russians or Laz or Hemshin or Georgians and so on. The gastronomy in Pontus developed following seasonal ingredients, of course, as with almost all traditional cuisines, right? Pre-Western cuisines across Europe and, of course, on other parts of the world. The weather was important, and the uncertainty of that was created during the winter months in the Pontic Mountains meant the people forced the invention of ways of preservation and storage of food and raw materials. So, therefore, there's a lot of pickles, there's a lot of salted fish, there's pre-cooked pasta, there are cheeses, as I said, dried fruits, and, of course, all the different types of seasonal vegetables and greens that they were eaten throughout the year. Vegetables, wheat and cereal and dairy products were the major food sources. Many ingenious methods were used to turn abundant summer milk into nutritious and artisanal dairy products, and this in addition to the Pontic diet's religious roots as another Orthodox group. There were strict dietary restrictions and long-term fasting in certain times of the year, especially the winter months before Christmas and before Easter, which tends to fall in spring, right? And so there was a lot of produce that needed to be preserved for later months. So dairy products, especially those from lactic acid fermentation, led the way of the Pontic gastronomy. The most common, of course, are tyrin, which is cheese, oxigala, which is yogurt, and tan, which is buttermilk. Of course, nowadays we know that consumption of fermented dairy products is the key to longevity, and we know about probiotics and so on, but the Pontic Greeks, religiously, one could say, ate and drank their fermented dairy products on a daily basis. Beans and kale, bulgur, core cereals, soups, pilaf, chavis and fusturon are the foods and dishes with the highest frequency that we encounter in texts. Soup was a popular dish among Pontic Greeks especially, so it's no surprise that it appears so frequently in our records. Tanomenon sorva is one of the most ones, and soups were eaten for breakfast, especially during winter, because of their nutritious and satisfying characteristics, of course. And this tanomenon sorva is similar to yaila chorbasi, which is the meadow soup, and the yogurt soup, which are eaten in different parts of Turkey nowadays. It may be cooked with rice instead of coarsely ground wheat and topped with spearmint and thyme. Some other soups that were consumed included those made with snails, poultry and beef, as well as lentils and beans with coarse cereals. The top three common dishes on our records are tanomenon sorva, as I said, chavis and fustoron. Varenika is another traditional Pontian pasta dish, which originates actually from Georgia, but is also found in Samsun in the Pontic Greek area. And the recipe is something like you need the flour, feta cheese, egg, and butter. And basically, you make a dough, you crumble the feta, you mix it with the cheese, and you make small, little, thin layers of phyllo, and you fill them with the egg and mixed cheese, and you top it that, and then you kind of make little stuffed pasta type of dishes, like tortellini or something like that, and you boil them in water. And then once they're boiled, then you fry them in loads of butter, basically. So some of the foods are, we have milk products like tan, which is a byproduct of butter extraction and a popular fermented beverage. There's iliston, which is strained yogurt with a sour taste. There's paskitan, which is skimmed salty yogurt. There's cheeses, like a soft cheese with a pleasant sour taste and lightly salted, called tsokalik. There's a hard cheese with sour taste called chortan. There's a cheese like Gruyere type of thing, koloth. There's a whey cheese called minjin. There are meat products like kavurmas, with sautéed cured beef in its own fat. Pastourmas, which is like pastirma, a highly seasoned and air-dried cured beef salami type of thing. Sujuki, which is dried and fermented sausage. Plihuri, which is a clean, cooked and dried cracked wheat. Korkota, which is a coarsely ground grains. Furniko alevri, which is a baked roast flour. There are pasta products like makarina, which is dried homemade pasta. Evriste, which is seeded and cut dough that has been pre-baked. So this dish called Tanomenon Survá, the soup, it's thickened with paskitan, which is drained fat-free salty yogurt. And there are also herbs. So to do this, you need some durum wheat, korkoto, some paskitan, which is a fat-free drained salty yogurt, a few tablespoons of cow's butter, an onion, salt, and some water. And basically you boil the cracked wheat. And then before you remove it from the fire, you take a couple of tablespoons of the broth. You let it cool slightly. In a deep pan, you stir the paskitan, the fat-free yogurt, into the broth. And then that makes a smooth paste, not too thick. Then you pour this paskitan mix into the soup and you stir well. And then in a frying pan, melt the butter. And then you mix the onions and they immediately pour that into the soup. Very, very easy in a way and very fast-free. The Pontian Greeks, during the summer season, the farmers would carry their animals in Parharia, which is the high mountains, where they found abundant food in the green pastures of the places called Sanda and Trebizond. And the milk collected at the time turned to a variety of dairy products, which was in turn the food for the winter. The production of cheese was very typical as well. And the Pontians used a technique that we now know as pasta filate, which they would separate the fat part of the whole milk and create butter and something called thogalou, which is a heavy rich cream. The leftover semi-skimmed milk was used to create various rich cheeses. Another example of their practices was that they used every last of their products was that they created butter from yogurt. From this leftover, they prepared the tan that we mentioned. And out of this cheese, they would prepare paskitan, which is a fresh soft cheese. And if that wasn't consumed right away, they would salt it and ultimately it will lead to a type of cheese called chortania, which is a hard, rough texture with a powerful, strong flavor in it. And apart from the dairy products, also includes, as we said, lots of pasta and pies. And yeah, in times of austerity, people would not feel deprived because they had all these products. Then even stale bread would be cooked in many variant forms and always had something interesting added to it. There's a guy called Rayan, like a delicatessen in Thessaloniki, which specializes in Ponti cuisine. And this guy has all the stuff. He grows all his own stuff in his farm in Kilkis in northern Greece. And basically the family grows all their own food. And yeah, this guy, Rayan, this farm and deli shop has all the stuff nowadays. And it's a really interesting place to find out about this unique variation of Greek cuisine. I'll put link with the website of the farm of Rayan and the cheese shop. And also some Google link, perhaps, so you can find it if anyone travels to North Greece for adventure and holidays at some point, or for food and gastronomy reasons as well. Piroshki is another typical Pontian dish, and it's obviously a type of pita or pastry that is often consumed in many parts around the Black Sea. And this recipe, which follows traditional Pontic recipe, it's also found in places like Kars and Chalka in Georgia. And you will need flour, you need eggs, lots of cow's butter, 500 grams of beef beans, onion, salt, black pepper and water. And you start by melting 2 spoonfuls of butter, and as soon as it melts, you add the onion, which is finely sliced. When the onion begins to emit a nice aroma, then you add the minced beef. Add a proportional amount of salt and some pepper, and as soon as this is cooked, remove the pan from the heat and put aside. Add the flour to a bowl and add some salt and enough water for a lightly textured dough Mix it well and take a small amount of the dough with a spoon. Add some butter to a frying pan and fry the dough piece on both sides. Continue doing this until you have about 10 or 12 pieces of dough. As soon as they are all cooked, add some of the cooked mince into each piece and wrap into a roll. In a large bowl, beat the eggs and dip each piece into the egg. Fry each piece on both sides into a pan containing melted butter and serve immediately. In any case, these recipes and dishes are unique for us perhaps in Greece, but not so different from the food that people eat in and around the Black Sea region and the modern countries that are part of this region nowadays. And in any case, this is a short introduction to the cuisine. I'll endeavor to have a lot more fascinating facts and recipes in another episode. So that's it for today. Thanks for listening. I've been Thomas Dinas, and this was the Delicious Legacy Podcast. By the way, if you want to help the podcast grow and find more interesting ancient foods and recipes to investigate, and perhaps new guests and so on, please help the Delicious Legacy by becoming a Patreon member. Just go to Patreon, type the Delicious Legacy Podcast, and yeah, you can be a member from $3 a month. Otherwise, there are other ways you can help. Just rate and review the podcast. 5 stars is preferable. Share it with friends, like share it with 3 friends, WhatsApp a few friends, or Facebook message and so on. And yeah, basically, that helps immensely taking the podcast further and further out there. And I hope you enjoy our adventures through food and through time. See you soon for another archaeogastronomical adventure.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.